This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow on the first Science Friday of 2004. We'll take a look at the top science stories of 2003, plus flying through a comet's tail. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday with Ira Flatow. In a world of CDs and digital downloads, there are still phonophiles who are committed to that old technology, the vinyl record. Call them dedicated, call them obsessive. Collectors still troll the retro shops to accumulate thousands of vinyl records. And if you're any kind of self-respecting vinyl collector, well, you've just got to have a system to categorize and organize your LPs. In the movie High Fidelity, John Cusack explains to a friend the method to his particular madness.
I guess it looks as if you're reorganizing your records.
Yeah.
What is chronological?
No.
Not alphabetical.
Nope.
What?
Autobiographical.
No way.
Yep. I can tell you how I got from Deep Purple to Howlin' Wolf in just 25 moves. If I want to find the song Landslide by Fleetwood Mac, I have to remember that I bought it for someone in the fall of 1983, Pyle, but didn't give it to them for personal reasons.
That sounds
comforting.
Yes.
Are you a hardcore record collector? How far have you gone to buy that one particular record? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now from his home in Somerville, Massachusetts, it's Brent Milano. He's a writer for the Boston Herald and the author of the new book, Vinyl Junkies, Adventures in Record Collecting. And welcome to Talk of the Nation. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Neil.
Interesting listening to that clip from the movie. In a way, you write in the book, the difference between somebody who has some records and a collector is organizing them.
It's part of that. It's partly the need to have everything in a nice, tidy compartment somewhere. You've got to know exactly where everything goes. And whether you can ever find it again is another question.
Part of being a collector, whether it's vinyl or comic books or whatever it is you happen to collect, it's the idea of imposing order on the universe.
That and surrounding yourself with the things that matter most, like choosing your own soundtrack or your own sort of worldview that's reflected in what you own and collect.
So how would you define a vinyl junkie?
Well, just somebody that loves music, loves the artifact itself, and loves the thrill of the chase. I think those are the three components of it.
The thrill of the chase. Go into that a little bit.
Well, you never know how far you're going to have to go once you know what record you really need, at least the one you really need this week. It might be online, but it probably won't be. It might be in a store somewhere in another part of the world. You might have to go on a quest for 6 or 7 months to find it, but somewhere it's out there.
And by a quest, you mean flea markets and backyard sales?
It can be that. Some people have gone much further than that. There are people that have traveled around the South looking for blues 78s that have even put in ads in newspapers to find people that used to know people that worked for the record plant. It can be quite a science.
Our number again, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255. Here's a call from Michael in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Happy New Year.
I collect sort of obscure punk releases from the late 70s and the early 80s. And it's somewhat of a unique format because a lot of them were only released in 500 copies of the kids putting them out themselves, sort of a do-it-yourself DIY thing.
Definitely.
And sort of tying into what you talked about earlier, it's just the technology of the Internet has really changed the methodology of collecting.
Yeah.
Because through eBay and through trolling the web and looking for things, that you can somewhat easily, much more easily, find these things than you could have, you know, 5 years ago. It's just been an absolutely revolutionary way to find the records that were previously, you know, you'd look for them for years and years, and now you only look for them for...
Yeah, and some people that have those records aren't letting go of them. One person I talked to in the book is Steve Wing, formerly of the Dream Syndicate. And he had a band before the Dream Syndicate whose one early single is considered very collectible. And he says he knows where all the copies of that record are. They're in his dad's basement, and he's not letting them out of there because he doesn't think it's that good a record.
Yeah, well, certainly you can get the copies that are only 50 of them. They'll go for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and that's where you have to set limits. But
definitely.
Is it as much fun, Michael, if you can get it on eBay in 30 seconds?
I think the obsession is about getting the record that you're looking for, and it doesn't matter. to some degree, it doesn't matter how you get it. I've sort of grown up in the collecting through mostly the internet. Back in the day, it was you'd go to the shops and you'd troll the shops and maybe you'd find it, maybe you wouldn't. I guess it's much more fun to find something in a shop way underpriced, but you know the opportunity really doesn't exist these days.
How much stuff do you have, Michael?
I don't know. I'd say about 1,500.
1,500. So that's how much room does that take up?
A couple of shelves and then the 7 inches go in bins and whatnot. It's living in small apartments is certainly a problem, and then moving it's certainly a problem.
Yeah, but at least you collect singles, so you've got all those wall space that can be filled with vinyl LPs left to go.
Well, LPs are somewhat, they don't make shelves anymore, so you have to sort of cobble together what you can for shelving.
Milk crate cartons, that kind of thing.
I have to ask, Michael, do you live alone?
I have a dog, but yes, I live alone.
Brett Milano, you write often that there is a point in many relationships where somebody says, it's me or those records.
Yes, and usually that's the cue for the person to say, okay, see you later.
I think it would be more the cost of the records in some sense.
Yes.
They might not appreciate the outlay of cash.
Yeah, or just the pure amount of being crowded out by them.
Hopefully I never get to the point where I have rooms and rooms of them.
There is somebody in the book that nearly broke up with his girlfriend because she came into his house with a copy of the album Live Killers by Queen, which he sort of thought was not the coolest record in the world. So that was a relationship that nearly reached a crisis point.
But you have to limit imposing your tastes on others, I suppose.
Michael, good luck finding whatever it is you're looking for in the new year.
Oh, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's talk now with Kurt, and he's with us from Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Hello, how are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I have been a vinyl collector since I'm about to hit 50 years old, and I've been a vinyl collector since I was a kid. That was the way we first went into the store, started buying 45 singles, and got into albums as they came along, as I grew to look more for the whole record than just the hit single.
Excellent.
But CDs have come out. A lot of records have been transferred to CD. Why don't you just get the CDs, Kurt?
The expense is unbelievable. A lot of things, you're right, they do come out on CD. And, of course, there's always been a little bit of a quality question. And I have to agree with Neil Young in particular that a lot of things sound fuller on the record. I'll buy the CD of a record that I loved when I was a kid, throw it in my car as I drive, and there just seems to be something missing to it sometimes.
One person I talked to in the book was Bill Englund, who remasters CDs for the Rhino label. He's one of the big names in that field.
Oh, yeah, Rhino's great.
Yeah, and we actually put the question to him, what about people who say that whatever you do, the records sound better? And he says, you know what, you might be right.
I have to agree with him in a lot of cases.
There is also something special, and Brett Milano, you write a lot about this, about the object itself, the record.
A record has more soul. There's just something about it. This is about the physical act of placing a record on a turntable and placing the needle on the record. You don't do that when you press a button on a CD player. It's not the same feeling.
And watching it go around, there's a belief somehow that even though this is little squiggles in a groove and really, really hard to understand how that duplicates itself in high-quality sound, but it's understandable, certainly more understandable than whatever it is going on behind the scenes in that CD player.
At least you can see it happen. And you know you can, like, I'm sure a lot of us had the experience of staring at a record and figuring out where all the music was and learning, like, where all the quieter parts look like compared to the louder parts on a vinyl record. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah, I've spent more hours than I care to remember playing records at a radio station, Mahler Symphonies and that sort of thing,
and watching
all those records go around, the labels, fascinating stuff, hypnotizing.
Speaking of classics, I mean, you can even see where the drum solo is on In a Gotta Da Vida.
If you want to.
It's better than hearing it, maybe.
The you guys are right. The physicality of holding the records, looking at them, and at my advanced age, who can read all those things on the back of those CDs?
Yeah. You got to squint.
And as far as replacing the records, too, I've lost track, but I'm somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 albums, and I'm not sure how many singles. So, like I said, the expense of that is just something. And one of your previous callers, the moving and the storage, that's a major concern. There's no doubt about that. I have a wall full of 15 cabinets that when I do move, at least I can take them down from their stacks and move them around. But there's no doubt the records has come across with my wife pretty much, and she just looked at me with a good stern eye when that came up in your other caller.
Kurt, good luck with her and your records.
Thank you very much, you guys. Everybody have a happy new year.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
We're talking with Brent Milano, the author of Vinyl Junkies, Adventures in Record Collecting. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Lee, and Lee's with us from Detroit.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lee.
We're riding home from our Christmas vacation, and I just had to call you because my husband is a crazy collector.
How crazy is he?
He has 6,000 record albums.
Oh, my. That takes up a little room now, doesn't it?
It sure does. We're looking for a new house just so we can have storage room. It's awful.
Lee, let me ask you something. Every call we've gotten from somebody who says they're a collector, they all happen to be male.
Yes.
Do you think that's pretty much telling the story right there?
I think so. When the other caller talked about his wife giving him the eyebrow, I gave my husband the same thing when you started in on the story.
Brett Milano, are the vast majority of record collectors men?
A vast majority, but by no means all of them. I did talk to a number of very obsessive women collectors, including one who has literally a room full of Olivia Newton-John records, everything she ever put out in every country in every variation. You might not find a lot of men that will collect those.
I think those might be a very selective item.
What you call a specialized taste, I believe.
I suspect so. Lee, what does your husband indulge in?
Oh, he collects all kinds of music. He can tell me right now what 60s, 70s rock.
That's a big field.
Yes.
And so you have to have a lot of records. There's no way around it.
Yes, we have a whole basement full, and he also uses his whole brother's basement full.
Well,
awful.
Good luck, and tell him to drive safely, okay?
Thank you. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Brett Milano, this is, as much as there's out there, in a sense, a lot of this is finite. This is a universe that is not getting any bigger.
It's true, but you'd be amazed at how much stuff there still is. Every few years, something else gets rediscovered. I mean, currently, 70s funk and soul records have really become in vogue, especially after hip-hop and sampling. So there's crates of those out in the South that have never been plumbed before, and they're being looked into quite a bit right now.
Let's get another caller in, and this is Reed, who's with us from Clintonville, Wisconsin.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Thanks for this opportunity. I just want to get this one thing out, and that is that for about 25 years, I've been looking for what is supposedly a second album. I only have one by a couple, Dick and Kiz Harp. Kizharp is the woman, and she was a jazz singer from Texas, absolutely fantastic. And she died at age 29.
Hmm. And how long have you been looking for this?
Oh, about 25 years. And I've combed used record stores in Chicago and Milwaukee and St. Paul, Minneapolis, Wisconsin, other places in Wisconsin, and have never found it.
Sounds like you got it pretty bad, Reed.
Well, I have for this one album, for this one woman. And I think I have every Julie London vinyl that was put out.
Again, a specialized taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks very much.
And good luck, Reed.
Well, thanks. Okay, take care.
Okay.
Maybe somebody will call.
Maybe somebody will call and pass that along to him.
I relate to that feeling of really needing something and it's not there, yeah.
What is your holy grail?
I found a couple of mine. I go through different phases. Believe it or not, I had this real urge to find a Soupy Sales record on the Motown label, which just seemed a great accident of musical history that he would even record for Motown.
Hmm.
And I found it, and it is both really great and really awful, which is just what I was hoping for.
Brett Milano's book is a group of stories about people who've collected the wonderful and the awful. It's called Vinyl Junkies, Adventures in Record Collecting. Thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
We're going to end with a little bit of vinyl ourselves. This, you may remember, an item from the Beach Boys. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.